Yeah, I'll tell you one that happened to me last year because I never saw this coming.
Last year.
Last year, I still run the race on my own. I go out on a day and I run it virtually. Okay. So I was running it last year, September 1st, and it was a cool night and the sun was on the rocks. And anyway, I was going up Blackhead and I got bit by a rattlesnake.
Whoa, no way.
Yeah, I didn't even know what happened. I just know I reached up. And I'm bleeding, and I'm thinking, what? I can't even see where I'm cut, but I'm bleeding badly. And people say to me, "Well, didn't you feel it?" I said, "No, I was running up Blackhead. I was in a world of hurt." I
Yeah.
sat at the top, I let the bleeding stop, and then I went on and I finished up. And then I still couldn't really see any marks. The next morning, I woke up with the two fang marks, and I since showed it to a number of emergency room docs, and they said, "This is definitely a rattlesnake bite."
No crap.
So 25 to 30% of the time when an adult rattlesnake bites you, it does not inject venom. It's what they call a dry bite. And
Wow. Mr. Lucky right there.
yeah, I mean, I got a picture of it. I could probably send it to you, and I don't know if you can.
Bushwhacks were some of the worst days I've ever had in the mountains, or life, really.
And I tell people all the time, never underestimate the Catskills. You can't underestimate them.
Why the Catskills is such a great place for trout.
It is really the development of New York State. Catskills were responsible.
Now you're listening to Inside the Line, the Catskills.
So, Dick, how are you doing today, sir?
I am very well. And
Beautiful days, right? The beautiful weather.
it is, and I think that's about to change. I think we're going to get some rain. That not that we don't need it, because we sure do.
Definitely. Definitely. We definitely need the rain. And but like I said, it's all dry and muddy and dry and soon to be resourced with water, hopefully.
We need it because we got some rain last week and it didn't do anything.
Yeah, it felt like that rain was kind of like heavy, but it just soaked right through and then done. It dried right up.
Yeah, it was all absorbed, so.
Yeah, there's several places I go when I'm hiking that I can see where it's totally dry. When you like go up to Deep Notch in between
Yep.
Hawkett and Sherrill, and you see that what's supposed to be a pond there, and it's like a mud pit. It's you can easily tell that there's something going on.
Yes, and the stretch on Catterskill High Peak from Palenville over to Platte Clove, there's big stretches that are often ankle deep mud, and they're not bad right now.
Wow. Crazy, crazy. So a couple things before we get into some discussion and stuff. This is the first time I've done this in like a week or two, or 2 weeks, I think. So it's been a while. I had the Pemmi Gosset loop that I did up in New Hampshire a week or two ago, which was crazy. We'll talk about that in a second. But there's been a decent amount of call outs for the Rangers. So on like May 31st, Dawson, Ranger Dawson responded to a Catterskill Falls report of a hiker with an arm injury, a 58-year-old woman from Brazil, and her daughter hiked down the stone staircase over the rocks and waded in the water. While returning, the subject fell on the steam bed rocks. So once again, it's slippery down there. They probably had like some Nikes on and stuff like that. Of course, Dawson's the man. He's responds to this all the time. Fixed them up, Wyndham Ambulance. He probably just walked them up himself because he's one of those dudes.
He's great.
Yeah, he's a wicked dude. I've met him several times. He's a fun guy. Then in town of Wyndham on June 6th, report of two subjects from Central Valley lost in the Wyndham Blackhead Range. They got cell phone coordinates and calls, and Ranger Fox narrowed them down to a location of a 60 and 59-year-old son on the Escarpment Trail. So Alwyn found the pair cold and exhausted at the Batavia Kill Lean-To, and Rangers assisted the subject and helped them out the Big Hollow trailhead. So resources were cleared at 12:15. So that was a good 4 hours, 4 or 5 hours right there.
Finishing in the middle of the night.
Yeah. And it's funny when people say the escarpment, they'll think of, you know, back in the North-South Lake region or towards the end, you know, towards Windham. But they don't really let, not a lot of people talk about the Blackhead escarpment, which is, the sketchiest part of the escarpment.
Yes, especially the southern part of Blackhead.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it depends which way you're going, because the north face going up, it is, you know, brutal, but not that many people go down that. But if you do, that's risky.
It is. It is. And we'll be talking about the escarpment tonight, which is, God, I've been waiting for this. I don't know why I haven't had you on air earlier, Dick. It's just, I don't know.
You get busy. That's why.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and, you know, I've never known how to say this, this name of this town. How do you say that town? Blenheim?
Let's see. Blenheim? Okay. I'm going to go with you, because then, you know, I can just say I was misled.
Okay.
Yep. I think that is how it's okay. Said.
In the town of Blenheim in Schoharie County, Forest Ranger France overheard radio traffic about a group of lost hikers in Minekill State Park. Minekill, long path, not really tough to get lost on there. So the hikers from Otigo, my hometown, took a different trail down from Minekill Falls and became lost. This is not a hard trail to follow, people. I don't know why. So Ranger France responded with the environmental conservation piece. Ooh, ECP, I haven't heard that in a while. Bowen and Burles and Schoharie County Office deputies and New York State Police. Wow. Responded to the vehicles to help locate the hikers. The hikers called and advised that they could hear the air horns. So they did air horns. Nice. Wow, this is something different. They located the subjects, and Ranger France provided water and helped the hikers back on the trail. Schoharie County medics checked out the group and determined no further medical assistance. Resources were clear at 5:39 p.m. Interesting. So that was during daylight that they were lost. Down in the Minekill State Park, which is a very, very easily, heavily trafficked trail on the long path. So one of the most beautiful places on the long path. So interesting. So yeah, big, decent amount of call outs, you know, May 31st, June 6th, June 1st, not too bad. Nothing too crazy like they have up in New Hampshire and stuff like that, which is good. And we'll talk about the New Hampshire stuff later, because I'll talk about that. So welcome everybody to episode 80 of Inside the Line of Catskill Mountains podcast. I'm here with Dick Vincent. If you don't know his name, you should by now, if you've been hiking the Catskills, because he is one of the amongst the legends in the Catskills. In 1977, he created the Escarpment Trail Run. Amazing. What is it? A 30K, correct? 18.6 miles?
Thereabouts, yes. I've always figured out the distance from the trailhead sign, which said 18.6 to North Lake.
Nice. And he created that run in 1977, 46 years ago. Amazing that trail run is older than I am. And I'm here to talk with legend Dick Vincent about this trail run and about trail running, you know, the differences of now and then, and different stuff like that in the Catskills, because he has been here for a long time and he knows the Catskills, and I'm very, very excited to have him on here tonight. So welcome to the show, Vince.
Thank you very much. It's really a pleasure to be here. And, you know, I've heard, you know, you and I have been kind of in the same circles, but not crossing paths much. So it's a real pleasure to be here with you tonight.
Yeah, I'm excited. I can't wait to hear. Like once again, I'm a history buff of the Catskills. I hike, but I love the history. And I love hearing people's thoughts of what was going on then and what's going on now, the differences and stuff. And I can't wait to hear it. I know there's a crazy vast difference, but somewhat.
Your spirit's the same.
Yeah. Spirit's the same. The finish the race and the finish fast.
Yeah. And the same goes with hiking, right? It's to be out there, and the spirit of it is all the same. A lot of stuff's changed, but it's just as good.
Awesome. So thank you to the monthly supporters, Darren White, Vicky Ferrer, John Comiskey, Jim C., Michael Bonger, David Mead, Matt Smith, and Sharon Klein. I really thank you guys for supporting the show. Also, sponsorship. Thank you very much to Outdoor Chronicles Photography for being sponsor of the show. Molly from Outdoors Chronicle Photography specializes in veteran elopement and veteran couple photography in the Catskills, Adirondacks, and the famous White Mountains. Also, don't forget your pets. They are just important. She is also an officiant for getting married and a licensed guide. So don't hesitate to get a hold of Molly on all platforms. She posts us daily on her social media post, and they are absolutely fantastic. Also, if you've ever wanted to learn more about hiking and backpacking, or even brush up on your new skills or old skills in the backcountry, check out Trail Bomb Project, a hiking and backpacking school made by Joe and Scott of the New Jersey Search and Rescue Team. So if you want to learn new or old skills of hiking and backpacking, check them out on their website and social media platforms. They are doing different things each weekend, and where it goes from map and compass to maybe fire starting or just backpacking overnight on a whim. They have everything. Guys, check them out. So coffees. Thank you, Arlene, for the coffee. I really appreciate it. If you don't know what a coffee is by now, coffees are like donations periodically to the show that you can give to me that goes towards funding towards the show. Basically, a lot of people think this is free, but it's not. So Dick, you drinking anything tonight? I know you said you didn't drink, but did you bring anything local along?
I didn't. You know, all I got is, well, local water. It's from my tap, which is out of my well, but
which is probably the best tap in the world, probably.
You know, I do have good water, so I'm fortunate.
We are very, very fortunate to have that water up here in upstate. Trust me. So, so I'm having once again, a good old rum and coke. I haven't had one of these in a long time because hiking and life consumes you. So you don't have any time to have good something to drink. Oh, so, Dick, you've been on any previous hikes lately that you want to chat about?
Well, one of the hikes that I do a lot is up here on South Mountain because I live in Palenville and I am about 600 meters from the forest access parking lot up here that goes towards Harding Road and that sort of thing.
Wow.
Father's Day, I was out on South Mountain with my son and we hiked for about 3 hours.
Wow. Nice. That has got to be a blessing.
And right there. I love that. I love the Palenville. I'm so fortunate to have it. And that was the most recent one I've done. I've been up on Plateau this year a few times. I really like going to Plateau because I just like to climb up and then the view from the top. I was on Sugarloaf too.
Oh yeah, beautiful places that you can't like get satisfaction out of unless it's foggy.
Yes, absolutely. Those are all good ones.
So since you live so close to South Mountain, have you been to the plane crash up there?
On South Mountain, I have not. Oh yeah, the one it's right off the trail from before Boulder Rock. That one you're speaking of, correct?
Yep.
Yes, I thought maybe there was something new I hadn't heard about. Yeah, I've been there a number of times.
It's crazy where it's like located, how close it is, but how because of the mountain laurel and the thickness, you can't spot it at all.
You know, years ago when that happened, my cousin was working at North Lake, and he was the one that found the wreckage.
What? Oh no way.
Yeah. I remember I was a young guy and, he was, 5 or 8 years older than I. And that was a big deal when he found the plane. And
no, like right after it happened?
Well, the plane went down and people knew it went down. They just didn't know where it was. And
wow.
So out everybody went. There was, he happened to be either the lucky or the unlucky one that found it. But there were a lot of people looking for it on the mountain.
Yeah. So like, how old do you think he was at the time? That's gotta be a tough moment.
I think he was probably, late teens. Cause in the summer, people would, I worked actually when I was my senior year in high school, I worked at North Lake. And all those people would, if there was something to be a search party going, they would all get involved.
Wow. That's gotta be a life-changing event to find a plane crash that just had happened at that young of age.
Yes. And wow. We think of South Mountain now because the trails are so well maintained and over the years they were, but there was about that time hiking wasn't as busy. We're talking the 60s and late 50s, 60s, so there wasn't as much going on.
And that's crazy. See, that's what I love to hear about how crazy the difference is. Like you say, the 60s and 70s of now and then, like 60s and 70s, like, God, the bushwhacks were absolute complete bushwhacks. You probably didn't have as many as parking areas as you did nowadays and stuff. And, the 3500 Club was just starting in 1967. So, wow, that's just the crazy differences. It's just so cool. It's good to hear about that.
Yeah. And when I started, it was in the 70s that I really got going with the trail running and then the hiking and stuff. you'd go to these parking lots for like at Big Hollow. You hardly ever saw a car there. It wasn't that busy. You just go in, and if you three cars, hey, wow, there's three cars in the lot. That's a big deal. And now that's a slow day in the winter.
Yeah, that's a slow day. That's a storm day in the winter. That's oncoming storm. Somebody needs to get their peaks done. So, so recently I've done the PEMI loop a couple of weeks ago. I've been chattering this on my social media pages. So if you don't, I know, Richard, you probably know about this. The PEMI Gosset Loop up in New Hampshire is a brutal hike, 34 miles, 10,000 feet of gain.
Yeah, and that's a go-to hike for a lot of people. That is like a bucket list thing.
Yeah, so I was fortunate enough to get offered this from my friend Henry, who I'll remember. But Henry offered this for me with a bunch of retired veterans from the military. So I'm just like, oh yeah, this is 34 miles, 3 days. I'm good. 10 miles a day. Maybe like 3,000 to 4,000 feet of elevation. I've done this stuff. I've done most of the escarpment in a day, like half of the escarpment. I've done Devil's Path in a day. Yeah, this will be fine. What I wasn't ready for was the massive amount of rain we got. It was treacherous. It wasn't treacherous. So it was just the rain gets into your head. You hope to see all these beautiful views on Bond Cliff and Bond and West Bond, stuff like that, Galehead. First 2 days, we got nothing. We barely got any views. There was maybe skies cleaning up. Rain would just come and go, and then it would pour for maybe like an hour or two, and then stop for maybe like 20 minutes and then pour again. So I have waterproof boots. I have amazing socks, but at the end of the day, I take my socks off and they're sponges. It was disgusting. And this is like, the funny thing is I've met Henry. He was on a previous episode with me talking about the Triple Crown, but I've never met these other guys before. So these guys are military people. They know how to get pushed to the limit. And I'm sitting here, the only one that's not military. And I'm like, it's like sitting here. I'm like, yeah, I'm really not having a good time. I'm just like, I was here for the views. This is why I did this. It's because, you're above tree line and stuff, maybe in the winter I would have a different experience because I love being in that sense of, like survival, I guess,
Right. Yeah.
You're just like, oh man, I can push through this. I can get through this amazing storm or something. But like in the rain, 50 degrees, it's just like, man, this is not, it's boring. And, The trail leader was an ex military, and like he would look at me and once in a while he'd be like, hey, we're at 6 miles, and I'd just give him the finger. I was just like, listen, don't tell me how much time is left. Just let me know when we're at the spot we're gonna be camping. And a lot of people, don't understand that, we have 6 miles left, but there's also 25 feet of elevation gain. So that might be a nice smooth 3 miles, but then you got 1,000 miles up. Or 1,000 feet up.
Yeah. And the elevation changes everything.
Yeah.
So and when you're talking the whites, you're also talking about some significant elevation where it can become an altitude thing with breathing.
Yeah.
I was up there, did the Franconia Ridge thing last, and you're over 5,000 feet. So,
yeah. What did you think about that?
I thought it was, I went on a beautiful day. So how bad can it be?
Yeah. I got the Franconia Ridge on a beautiful day. I didn't get the rest of that. So 20 miles on two crappy days, but we hit the Franconia Ridge on a beautiful day and I was blown away.
And then probably everything else became worthwhile.
Yes. Except for the last 4.5 miles down was absolutely brutal on my feet because at that time, blisters were already forming and they were enhancing every step down.
Which way did you come down from past the Greenleaf Hut?
So what we did was we started at Lincoln Woods our first day, and then we started ended at the Goyot Lean-To, which was 10 miles. Then we went to Goyot to Greenleaf. We went up to Lafayette and descended down to Greenleaf. Luckily, we had warmthness and dryness and stuff. And then we went from Greenleaf to Lincoln Woods.
Okay.
So we went from Lafayette to Lincoln to Liberty to Flume and then back down.
Okay.
What a phenomenal place. I couldn't. And the funny thing is we didn't barely saw people for 2 days, and then we see massive amounts of people.
Oh yeah. Well, especially when you get good weather, then you're going to see so many.
But I don't blame them. I do not blame them one bit.
I kind of lean towards those nice days myself.
I do too. That was just, like I said, a once in a lifetime event that I took the offer and I was like, hell yeah, this will be great. They have two people leading the hike that were a search and rescue volunteer for the Pemigewasset search and rescue team. And then also Henry, who is a hiking guide for West Mountain hiking guide. So awesome stuff. Love it. Also last night, Dick, I don't know if you saw my pictures. We had the sunset hike on Overlook Mountain for the Alzheimer's Association. Wicked.
Yes. I was on Overlook maybe a week and a half ago at sunset. And it was gorgeous.
Isn't that the most incredible view in the Catskills? What do you think? What's your favorite view?
That from the fire tower of Overlook is good. I really love that. I like the view from Pale of Overlook a lot.
Yeah.
That view from the John Robb lean-to, it's hard to tell you which one I like the most, because sometimes it depends on the weather and the time of day you're there. Yep. And you think, today I like this one the best.
Yep, exactly. I you know, I've never been disappointed on Overlook. So I tell people if they want to get hooked in the Catskills, Overlook is the first spot to definitely do that.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So once again, thank you to everybody who has donated to the Alzheimer's Association fundraiser that I did. We hit the goal of 1,000 and then I put it to 1,500 and we hit that goal. We hit 1,550. Fantastic. Thank you, everybody who has donated. I really appreciate, for my first fundraiser ever, really. My whole life, I've never done really a fundraiser like this, and we crushed it. So thank you, everybody who has donated. I probably will do a separate short episode of thanking everybody who donated, because there's definitely a long list. But it was a fantastic hike. Beautiful day. Nice wind breeze at the top. Beautiful sunset. Just everything was phenomenal about the day. I couldn't say more. The only thing that sucked is the 2 hour drive back, and then I had to wake up at 3:45 in the morning. So got a good 3 hours of sleep.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So on to some news. Volunteer. We need volunteer club for the 3,500 club, Catskill Trail Crew, Catskill Mountain Center, Visitor Center. Anybody and everybody needs volunteers. So check them out. I know the 3,500 club is doing trailhead volunteers at Woodland Valley and Slide Down, which is awesome. Catskill Trail Crew is enhancing many places throughout the Catskills, and they are doing an amazing job. Matt Smith and Charlie are doing an incredible job around the Catskills. So volunteer once a year for 8 hours, and that will be a big drastic change in the Catskills. Trust me. It helps us out significantly one time or maybe twice.
If everybody did one day of volunteering, you'd have more help than you needed.
Exactly. Exactly. One day of volunteering. That's all I ask. It doesn't matter if you do the 3,500 club, the grid, the all trails challenge, one day a year. Yep. Mm-hmm. That's all it takes. So thank you once again, Dick, for chiming in on that. It makes a big difference. Trust me. So I usually do some Catskill Mountain history, but I don't have any tonight, because we're going to kind of talk about Catskill Mountain history, because history was made in 1977 with Dick McCreight in this race, right?
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting story, because, you know, a lot of times people say to me, well, where did you come up with the concept? You know, like it was some big complicated thought. It really wasn't. You know, I'd been running some trails and, I'd heard about this thing called the Escarpment Trail. And I said, hey, you know, this sounds like this might be, I was at this point, I had been a roadrunner for quite a number of years. And my friend, late Barry Hopkins had got me into trail running. So I heard about this Escarpment Trail, and I would say to people, hey, you know, this could be like a lot of fun to run this. And everybody would say, you know, that's a really bad idea. And the more people that told me it was a really bad idea, the more I wanted to do it. So I kind of drew up an application, sent it out to people, did a bunch, and 22 people said, yeah, okay, we'll show up. And they did. And, you know, we didn't know what we were getting into. We didn't have any aid stations. We didn't have any, few people carried any water with them.
You know? Unbelievable. 22 people in 1977, no social media, all by basically phone or word of mouth.
Right. I had, you know, some people I knew, you know, and I'd send it out to a lot of folks. It was, you know, write it up, photocopy it, or I guess I think we even mimeographed it then. The first one was mimeographed because Barry Hopkins was a teacher and he had a mimeograph machine. And, you know, put a stamp on an envelope, send it out, talk to people at, or hand them around at races. And that's how it started.
Wow. Unbelievable. So, wow. Get right into that. So let me go over for some sponsors.
Oh, I'm sorry. I get carried away.
No, not at all. Not at all, sir. It's just the thing I have to do, I guess. So if you're looking for new gear in the Catskills, say no more. Camp Catskill in Tannersville has all your hiking needs. You don't need spikes and snowshoes now, but you do need moisture wicking shirts, new shoes. They have moisture wicking like hairbands. They have moisture wicking towels, backpacking stuff. Now he's just getting into Catskill memorabilia. Awesome, amazing stuff at Camp Catskill in Tannersville. Check them out. Definitely have anything for your hiking needs in Catskills. Also, if you're ready to hit the trails, make sure you take the scenic route. Scenic Route Guidings are here to help you with your goals, big as small. Check out the Scenic Route Guiding on Gear Rentals on Facebook or Instagram for more information. If you mention the podcast, you can use 10% off. Use the code word Mountain Lion. All right, so let's get on to the guest of the night.
Let's go.
Dick Vincent and the Escarpment Run. So back in the days, we'll talk about this. I'm not going to give too much information, but Dick created this 46 years ago, he created the Escarpment Run. And Dick has been a trail runner ever since, you know, back then. And trail running has gotten really big in the days. And we're going to talk about that back and forth about trail running nowadays in comparison to back in the days. So, Dick, welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. This is not your first podcast, right?
No, it's not.
Of course. I was going to say, you're very good at this. So this is definitely not your first. Did Phil have you on his show?
Vondra, not yet. You're talking about Vondra, correct?
Yes.
Yes. You know, I think he's saving me for like a week when he's desperate.
Oh, come on. No way. he's a crazy dude, but he's super fun.
He is a really good guy and an incredible athlete and mountaineer. So,
yes. So, once again, like I said, welcome to the show, Dick. How about you give a little quick background about yourself, and then we'll get into some questions, sir.
Okay. Well, I started running back in the early 70s. I was living in California and I was running a couple of miles now and then, and I ran my first marathon out there and, moved back here to the Catskills. I was born in Catskills. So I didn't wander far. And I just got, you know, into the trail running. I hiked some too, especially since when Barry Hopkins, who was a very good friend of mine, he's the one who got me into trail running, but Barry loved to hike. And so he kind of got me into the hiking and the trail running thing. I went on to compete. I was a decent local regional runner. I've run the Boston Marathon a dozen times, and probably over my time, I've run between marathons and ultra marathons, which is a distance beyond marathoning. Couple of hundred of those events. And then I got into coaching and I still run, but it's, you know, some people would say, no, you don't. That's not running. Just as hard as it used to be. But now I coach a lot of athletes.
Wow. So Dick, I hope you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
I am 71.
Wow. No shit. Sorry for my language, but this podcast is explicit. So
okay, I was wondering because I, you know, if I get into a couple of stories, I want to make sure I can behave myself if I need to.
I hate to say it, but go all out. This is okay. my podcast. You know, I have some sponsors, but they know the stuff I do. Okay. So
okay.
But wow, awesome. You're 71 years old and you're coaching people into trail running. Fantastic, Dick. That well, is
I coach everything from, you know, track and field, or not field, but track races, road races, and trail running too. You know, I have people that go, you know, run a mile on the, that will be the race, and I'll coach those kind of people. But I also coach people that run up to 100 miles on the trails. Wow.
That's very inspirational. That gives me somewhat hope of just hiking instead of running. So,
you know what? It's moving. It's good. It doesn't matter. You know, moving is the important part.
Exactly. So, you know, being the transition of hiking, you were in California and stuff like that. What got you into like the running process, like even trail running more so?
Well, the running process started because I used to be a smoker. And I was in college, and a friend of mine said to me that I needed to offset some of the things that I do. Like I smoked, and I was a drinker a bit. So he started getting me into running, and I started running. And of course, the first couple of sessions, I ended up on a couch hacking my brains out. And so that was got me running. And when I was out in California, I ended up running my first marathon out there. And then it becomes sort of a passion, and you know, it goes from there in a lot of different directions. But so that kind of got me the hook. And then when I started Barry Hopkins, who was an art teacher in Catskill and a hiker, he also trail ran. So he said, oh, come run these trails with me. And so that got me doing that. And then it takes on a life of its own. And I started putting on a few events and started running them myself, and escarpment happened. And then after that, it's just a big snowball.
Yeah. So talk about marathons. How long is a marathon?
Okay, marathon is officially 26.2 miles, or should we say 26 miles, 385 yards.
Okay.
And the distance has varied over the years, but and then I think it was the 1908 Olympics. It was in London, and they wanted the race to finish at the Queen's Box, but I think start at the Windsor Castle or something, and that distance was 26 miles, 385 yards. And so then that became the official distance that everybody eventually went to, and as it is now.
So
an ultra marathon is farther than that.
Okay, so what's an ultra marathon?
Well, anything over 26.2 miles, but I think probably a lot of folks would say 50 kilometers, 31 miles, 31. Okay. But like a lot of these trail races, they take even like escarpment. It's almost, or in the early days, Ultra Running Magazine used to cover it because they felt like it took you a lot longer it would take than it would to run a marathon.
Yeah, exactly. Then the time once again varies because, you know, maybe a marathon might be, you know, 200 feet of gain, where in the escarpment trail you have 9,000 feet of gain.
Yeah, 9,000 feet of change, right? 5,000 worth of up and 4,600 feet worth of up. And, but it's, you know, like you're going up Blackhead, 1200 feet of that comes in a mile.
Yeah. And that's the difference. You know, people will say they've done marathons, and I'll be like, have you ever done a hike though? Like one hike, and like a marathon, you know, 26 miles, it really kills you. But if you do, you know, 10 miles of that with 4,000 feet of gain, it'll kill you.
Yeah. And you know, what the escarpment became was sort of a gateway from people to, because when I started, there weren't really any of these things. There was the Pikes Peak Marathon and, you know, but, and there was, you know, a couple of little trail runs, but there was nothing really technical like this, you know, that I know of in the country, and certainly on the East Coast. And so this became a gateway into trail running. And a couple of guys that came and ran it. Then they started trail races, and we started Northeastern Trail Runner Circuit. And that kind of got the whole trail running thing in the East Coast going.
Wow. Amazing. So the hiking differences of back in the 70s and 80s compared to now, what can you say about that?
You know, probably the first thing is the gear. Back then, the snowshoes were rawhide.
Yeah, right. Or we're all deer hide and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And then I can remember we could buy these little clamps that were like cleats, and you could bolt them to the snowshoe. And then they had like the one they call the bear paw, and then the Green Mountain bear paw, which are the smaller shaped ones. We didn't have, you know, the micro spikes that didn't exist. There were crampons, but they were very cumbersome, and leather straps, very sharp, easy to kill yourself with them.
Wow.
To putting them on was just difficult. So the gear has changed an awful lot. You know, I think the biggest change in winter gear has got to be micro spikes.
Wow.
And of course the new generation snowshoes, but also, you know, we didn't have headlamps. Yeah. LEDs did not exist.
The thousands of lumens that you can have did not exist.
Right. Right. It was changing your batteries or your bulbs and your flashlight.
Wow. You know? Unbelievable. What about like shoes, like grip and stuff like that? Do you think they're the comparable to the back in the 70s, 80s compared to today, or no?
You know, I had pretty good hiking boots back then, but of course they were leather. You didn't have the fine materials that we have now. And I think for me to be able to compare, I'd have to put a pair of those on now, right? And I don't have any.
Yeah.
I do have a couple of pair of old racing running shoes, and that I look at and go, wow, what a difference.
Yeah. So the thing you just said there was boots compared to shoes now, though. Does anybody that runs wear boots, though?
No, there are a couple of high top. Hoka makes a high top trail shoe, but I don't see many people wearing it. You know, I wear it a lot to hiking in the winter just because they're Gore-Tex and they're I find it much easier on my feet. I got a couple of specific foot issues. But yeah. I mean, there's so many good hiking boots out there now too. You know, we didn't have any of the nylon cord or Cordura stuff. Gore-Tex wasn't a thing yet. So
wow, unbelievable! It was just like you the leather boots and stuff like that were most the gateway, right? For people to start doing their stuff in.
Right. Yes, and then you know there was things called like mink oil that you'd put on them to try to waterproof them.
I heard those old tricks. Those are old military tricks.
Oh, yeah. Are they? Whatever. The military taught us well then. But that was how it was. And so now, you know, when we see people out on the trails in the winter and they don't have the proper gear, and you know, we're all saying, well, they should be having spikes and this and that. I think, yeah, well, I made that mistake.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, and that's the thing. That's why I like asking these questions. Because like people back in the days would you know you see people like Ralph Reindeck, Alan Villa, stuff like that, post pictures of hiking in the 80s and 70s, going up Mount Marcy with, you know, regular leather boots, jeans, and a flannel, and then he's sipping a beer and smoking a cigarette at the top. I like laugh so hard, but I'm just like, those guys are hardcore. They could not be beat. Like, it's so great.
Yeah. And Alan, you know, he knows these mountains a whole lot better than me, you know, so he probably spent more time in the early days hiking than I ever did. You know, I became a hiker, but trail runner. While I was doing that, Alan was out exploring every little nook and cranny in the mountains.
Yeah. But still, you, once again, you guys got both your separation. He was exploring the little tiny mountains, stuff like that. In the Catskills, and then you were creating, like you said, the gateway into trail running in the East Coast, and let alone, you know, the United States.
Yeah, well, I didn't know I was creating that. It just was something that was happening. You know, it wasn't a well thought out plan. You know, what I did know is that I was starting to meet people that were coming to this race and feeling like, you know, this is changing my life. They started trails and hiking and coming up to the Catskills, and you know, they would come to me and say, this totally changed my life. And it was amazing. I mean, I'm sure you've seen it and people have heard it, how folks take up a hiking program and get first exposed to the mountains, and all of their issues in work and other facets of their life seem to be managed better just from a change in mental perspective. And I found that with the Escarpment Trail run.
Right. I agree with you 100% of that. I will say that, you know, going to the mountains definitely changes me. And like you said, you know, people have these niches that you do. I love hiking and I love talking about the Catskills. And like you said, you know, you love running, and some people have that niche of running the Catskills. And, you know, and you started that. That's amazing. Start at 1977. Well, so let's, we'll we'll get into that in a second. So let's talk about your coaching services. What can you say about that?
Well, it's pretty much dickvincent.com. There's I put out that you can go there and see a lot of it. I've gotten a lot of my certifications for endurance running through the USA Track and Field Association. I have my level 3, which is the highest that they offer. And I have IAAF, that's the international one. They're level 5, which is the highest they offer. So I work with a lot of runners. Most of the ones I work with are out of high school. And they're a lot of them are just people that are trying to run a marathon, maybe get faster at it. Some are highly competitive, but a lot of them are just people trying to do their best. And they've taken on the challenge. And so I try to help them as best that I can and help them prevent getting hurt, doing workouts that are productive rather than just going out and putting in the miles. And I do try to mold my coaching to what that athlete's needs are. And sometimes it's about balancing workouts with a family and jobs and that sort of thing. So I get a kick out of doing it and helping somebody. It may not be the workouts that you would give somebody else because they may be working nights all the time and are working 60 hours a week. And so you're making the best of the time they have available.
Wow. Awesome. I will plug that in to the show notes. Definitely. Once again, 71 years old and you're still kicking it like you're back in your 20s and stuff like that.
I don't know about that. I'm still trying to kick it.
You're teaching people though your stuff that you learned back in your heyday. And you know what, that's the thing.
I find that it is really better for me than I think I get more out of it than they do in the sense that I'm surrounded with younger people, a lot of them, right?
Yeah.
And it keeps me on my toes. It, I really feel like it's made me a better person.
Exactly. And once I said, you know, again, you're a legend of the Catskills, you're a legend of trail running. So there you go. I would definitely go with that and to check that out if I were to pursue in trail running, but definitely can't. My knees can't handle trail running. I can go down for maybe like half a mile and then be like, okay, I'm done.
Hey, you're out there. That's what counts.
I know. Agreed. So let's talk about 1977, when you started the Escarpment Run. How did this all come about?
Well, you know, I was, I got heard about this trail and I wanted to run it. And I talked to people about maybe putting a race on it and everybody said, oh, you know, that's really not a good thing to do. And I said, well, gee, I like that even better, you know, and I really meant to go run the whole trail before the race, but I didn't, you know, I was busy and I threw together this makeshift application and got it out. And, you know, 22 people showed up at Wyndham and wow. We went. And I could remember I told people to bring water or something like that with them, but there's sitting around us some pretty good runners there and they're tossing their water aside and saying, nah, we don't need this. And I'm thinking, oh, they must know something. I don't know. So off we went. And what I really can, that first year, it was tough. And thankfully, we had a good day. It was, you know, one of those beautifully clear, not too hot, dry days. And I can remember finishing that race and being really thirsty. And I came in, I was third place. And when I got there, there was these two guys, one of them, Billy Lauder, who was a really good marathon runner, but he was also dabbled in the road races of ultra running. And another fellow that won it, Paul Enright, and they were sitting under a tree. They were all covered with salt from sweating and being dehydrated. And it's a first time race. You know, you're looking to hear something good about it, the race. And I went over and I said to those guys, I said, well, what'd you think? And I just remember Billy Lauder sitting there on the ground, covered with salt, looking up at me, but kind of looking past me. And he just said, somebody's going to get hurt real bad out there today. I said, oh, boy.
Oh, man. And that's when your heart starts beating. You're like, oh, man, should I have done this?
Yeah. And I turned around and I said, okay, I'll wait till the next person comes in. And the next person didn't show up for almost a half an hour. But then they started rolling in. And, you know, it was once everybody kind of got that, sat down and we started a little barbecue, the spirit of it fell together and everybody got in and safe and sound. And we shared some great camaraderie and I just knew the race was going to happen again the next year.
Nice. So 22 people started and ended in the first year. So that's 100% success.
Yes. If you go to escarpmenttrail.com, which is the website for the race, and you search around there, you can find articles on past years. And there's an article there by Paul Fetcher, I forget what it's entitled, about that first year of the race. And he was a very good runner. He had won the Earth Day Marathon, was one of the top runners in the Northeast. And it is about his metamorphosis from treating this as a highly competitive race to just get me to the finish in one piece, you know.
Wow. It shows that, you know, people skip the Catskills because, oh, we don't have open summits or, you know, this and that. But they can be treacherous right there. It shows you.
Oh, yeah. You know, and just a sidetrack on that is, you know, compared to the Adirondacks, we love the summits of the Adirondacks.
Oh, yeah.
But I love the trails of the Catskills.
Yep. Yep.
You know, the trails of the Catskills are so nice. I love going on, being on those expansive viewpoints in the Adirondacks, but I'm not that crazy about the trails compared to the Catskills.
I agree. 100%. I've only been up to the Adirondacks a couple of times, but I cannot stop coming to the Catskills. It's something that I always look forward to and stuff. So that's fantastic. 22 people entered, 22 people finished. Back in those days, what was the time for the first finisher?
That year, the first finisher ran, I believe it was 3 hours and 26 minutes.
Wow.
Now, there's a little caveat to that. As I was going up, as you go up from Windham, you know, you get to the lean-to there, and there's that split in the trail. You can get out Peck Road. Well, I'm standing there, and some of the guys are standing, the local guys are standing there saying, hey, the first five guys went the wrong way.
Oh, no.
You got to turn them around. Well, they said, well, they'll figure it out. They took off the trail. So I ran down to get them all turned around, and eventually they did. And so there was that little add-on of, you know, probably cost them 10 minutes.
Oh, wow. So the path, once again, is from Windham all the way to, where does it end?
We end as soon as you come into the campground of, the picnic area of North Lake.
Okay.
Over on the North Lake side. When you come out of the woods, onto the grass right there. Boom.
Sweet. Awesome. So that what a great path, offers everything from ups and down to nice flat areas where you can sprint to beautiful viewpoints. The Escarpment Trail offers everything. So once again, amazing creation, basically, is what I'm going to say that you did in 1977. So
it has so much variety. It's really impressive.
Exactly. And like, once again, people who've never done this will be like, holy crap, this is pretty difficult. Like going up that, like you said, the north side, east side of Blackhead isn't no joke. It's no joke.
You know, and coming down it's hard on your legs and lungs going up, but the impressive part with the good trail runners is watching them descend, because they're just flying, and the coordination of eye, hand, feet, everything, trying to get through some of those ledgy type areas. These days when I run, I have a different sort of philosophy. Then I used to figure when I got to one of those ledges, I leap and look for a place to put my foot.
Yep.
Now I look for a place to put my foot, then I leap, you know.
Hey, that's now, a great philosophy.
I look for a place to put my foot and I sit down and crawl.
Same. Or what I do is I step down and then my knee gives way. I'm like, oh God.
Yeah.
And I'll fall then. But so the one thing I didn't know is I was looking up that you have to, of course, you have to qualify. Nobody can just enter this thing and just be like, yeah, I can do this, because that's going to be a hazard. So what do you have to qualify to enter this? What do you have to do?
It gets to be a tricky business. For a road marathon, I ask for them to finish in 4 hours and 15 minutes within the year. And for a trail race, it's got to be something similar to Escarpment in technicality. And then I ask them to be like within 85% more time than the winner took. And the reason we do this is one year we had people out there after dark. We were trying to get them all in.
Wow. And
the other thing is on my permit from the state of New York, I have to start this race in waves of 15 people every 5 minutes.
Wow.
As to not have, you know, a whole bunch of them running down the trail like a herd of buffalo. And so my aid station people are out there a long time. Last year, the people that did stop a point aid station, they didn't get out of the woods until after out of the mountains until 5:30 or 6 o'clock at night.
Oh, wow.
So if you had somebody another hour and a half back, then, you know, then we're starting to play around with getting near sunset. And especially if there happens to be somebody's hurt where we need to give help, we need to be able to get everything taken care of when we get daylight.
Yeah. So 1977, there were 22 people that entered. How many now? How many in the last year?
Well, the state gives me a permit for 350 people, but that's not for runners. That includes anybody that volunteers with the race.
Okay.
So, you know, the truth of the matter is I think the state doesn't know what to do with me because I've been doing this for so long. You know, they, you know, I think they, so there's nobody, I don't believe there's anybody in the DEC that was there when this race started.
Wow.
So I guess I'm, you know, they're not quite sure what to do. They just figure, okay, well, you know, and that said, they are wonderful people.
Yep.
I want to tell you the story. I hope you don't mind me getting off on digressing.
Not at all.
When I first started this race, I was in like years two, three, four of the race. I didn't know anything about permits that we needed them. And this guy comes up to my, I had a running store, and he comes up to my store and he said, you know, you've got this escarpment trail that's going on. And I said, yeah. I guess it was the following week or something. And he said, do you know that you need a permit for that race? I said, I do. Well, why? So he tells me, and he says, you know, the people up in on Wolf Road, which was at the DEC was, he says, you're on the radar screen now and they're going to show up race day. Make sure you have a permit. And if you don't, they're not going to let you run. So, you know, this was a Frank White was his name. And he ran a little bit. So he had an interest in that stuff. He didn't ever want to do anything like this, but so I said, well, I don't know what to do. What do I do? And he said, well, if you don't mind, he said, I took the liberty, and he reached in his pocket and pulled out a permit that he had filled out for me.
Wow.
And that has been kind of the relationship I have had in one way or another with the people at the DEC, in the sense that I've always felt like they've been there to try to guide me. And they certainly make me adhere to some rules, which you can see from their point of view. They've got a forest they have to protect and a public they've got to look out for.
Yeah.
But I've always felt like they've not ever been unreasonable, and I've really, really appreciated the help they've given me.
Well, yeah, I mean, to be honest, like you're, once again, you're a legend. So the creating this race has brought like people to the Catskills, and also, you know, people probably have fell in love with Catskills and volunteered in the Catskills. So the DEC is like, oh, thanks. So,
you know, I usually get a few people from, you know, I've had people from Australia, Italy, all over Europe, South America come. You know, I don't get dozens of them every year, but I get people to come a long way for this. And I do get people usually from 15 to 20 states.
Wow. Unbelievable. It's so cool. And now you're saying that probably over 200 people do this event per year.
Yeah, I aim to try to get like 250 at the, you know, off the starting line. Yeah.
22 to 250. Wow. Yeah. And that's a great, well, once again, that's a great limit, because you don't want the trail to be over packed and stuff like that, and people to get, you know, too competitive, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is it's after the runners go through, you know, I have sweeps out there and everything. People say, you don't even really know anybody's been through, you know, because we're tough on the litter. And I got, you know, I've got first aid people out there, and I've got trail sweeps. I've been fortunate enough to have, you know, a doctor who runs be part of my sweep and stuff. So it's been work good. And the DGC, I think, is, you know, we didn't like the waves in the beginning when they made us do it, but it really was for the best.
Definitely. Definitely. And that, once again, that relationship with the DEC and really, really helps out in the long run. Number one, with just the Catskills and with everybody else too. You have a sense of, how do you say it? You know, like partnership in somewhat.
Well, we are really, right? Whether we like it or not, we're partners, right? Because we're
exactly.
Yeah. And they're very reasonable. I really feel they are.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's hoops that they got to go through, but you know, if you've been doing this a long time, you know what they're doing. They will jump through those hoops for you to help you out. Yep. And instead of just, you know, throwing something out, like I'm going to do this run, let's get it done. They'll be like, hold up. We got a lot to go through. But then someone like you, who's reasonable, safety, you know, etiquette, stuff like that, you know, they will be like, you got it. Let's do this.
Oh yeah. We put together an emergency plan and how we're going to do it and all the contact people. And, you know, I do that with Rob Dawson, who you were talking about earlier. And he's terrific. So, you know, I get him all the information. He puts it all together in a spreadsheet.
I hope he listens to this sometime, because I mention him a lot, not just because of the search and rescue stuff that he always has to do.
He's a hardworking guy, let me tell you.
God, I could only imagine what he has to do. I know I talked to him a bunch of times, and he has a full list of stuff that he has to do all the time. So what about the differences between 1970 and now, besides, you know, the gear, like we talked about, and the amount of people? Is there any other differences that pop out to you?
Well, the hydration systems have really made it a big difference.
Oh yeah.
Because, you know, I backpack, I have aid stations at certain places, and we backpack all that water in, but the hydration systems have taken a little of that strain off, because 20 years ago, we didn't have these hydration systems. You know, people started carrying bottle belts and that sort of stuff, but you know, they depended on a lot on the fluids that I could bring in. And so I would limit them to X amount of cups apiece, because I, you know, about 30 gallons is about as much as I can get to an aid station. But that's changed a lot. And now, you know, the shoes are better, the run, you know, they just got so much good gear, you know, but the trail's still the trail, and you still got to watch out, because when you fall down, you get hurt.
Yeah. Especially in the Catskills. Once again, there's like when I was hiking at the Pemigewasset area in New Hampshire, I found it actually to be a lot easier than Catskills, because of the rock, the limestone and stuff had way more grip in the rain. And then I'm just like, man, going up in the Catskills, it'll be a pain in the ass in this shit.
Oh, and yeah, when it gets humid, they're like greasy.
Yep.
You know, sometimes a humid day with no rain, they're just as bad as it can get.
Yeah. And that causes, you know, the risk of someone, you know, trying to fly up it and slipping one little slip.
Yeah. Yeah. But, we've had them, as you know, we've carried quite a number of people off.
And before, you said 30 gallons to an aid station, 30 freaking gallons. Are you serious?
Yeah.
How do you haul that stuff up?
On back. For people that aren't familiar with the escarpment trail, there are no crossroads.
Yep.
So, you know, it goes in a backpack.
You know, 30 gallons.
Manitou's Revenge is this Saturday, which is another trail race. We just backpacked on last night. We packed 22 gallons up the Willow, and there'll be another 30 that go up race day.
Wow! No way. Cool. So I crazy because I'm like, you know, I do 3 gallon bladders, and then I do 2 1-gallon things on my side pocket. So that's 5 gallons, but 30 gallons, Jesus. Like, but, how many times?
It takes bodies, right?
Yeah.
If you're carrying 5, you're carrying a lot. Most people are good for about 3.
Yeah.
You know.
But still, that's awesome. That's crazy. And how fast do those 30 gallons go through? Do you guys get through all that towards the end of the race, or?
Yeah, I mean, there's some years if it's cooler, you know, they're dumping water, and I really feel like if they're dumping 5 gallons of water, or they've had enough. Because on a hot year, we have gone through all our water.
Wow. Crazy stuff. So it's kind of like a little pun that I have here for the next question. What complications do you run into with these competitions? Run into. Not that funny.
You mean from an organizational standpoint, or?
Either or, you know, like, you know, organizational standpoint, and then also during the competition, like, is there any, like, certain spots that, like, are known to be a hazardous area? I mean, we can go from the organizational standpoint at first.
Well, certainly the aid stations are definitely a complication, right? You need, what I'm very fortunate with the Escarpment Trail is that we have cell service.
Oh, good call.
That just changes life as far as if there's an emergency, you're not waiting for word of mouth to get out from a runner, right? We are everybody, and now that all the runners got phones, we really have, we can get, if there's a problem, we can get there quickly. You know, that's one thing. I wrote a few things down. You know, what you talked about, just determining who's qualified and not qualified to run. I don't want to get somebody out there that doesn't have experience with endurance events, because a lot of the hikers know this. You know, you're getting thirsty, or you're getting into a dehydration area before you really have a problem.
Yeah.
You sort of sense that. But the inexperienced person doesn't really know it until all of a sudden they're just cooked.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so that's one of the reasons. And two, it's kind of hard to drop out of this race. So
yeah, halfway in, you're just like, oh crap.
Yeah. You know, once you get to the top of Blackhead is, you know, and down towards Dutcher's Notch, you can, I mean, you can go out with the aid station people, but it's a long day, you know?
Definitely. So safety first is number one priority. That's fantastic, as it should be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, to me, that's always what I'm worried about. Right. And I love the race, and I know there's people, we have a lot of people that are very competitive and are looking to run as fast as they can on it. And I'm happy for that. But when the last place comes across the line and the sweeps are done, and then my aid station people are out of the mountains, to me, then I'm good.
Good. Good. Now, is there any like complicated, I know we always talk about the, you know, east, north end of Blackhead. Is that the most known area for kind of like complications?
Going up Blackhead is certainly on everybody's mind, because it is a dramatic climb, and you've been up it. So, you know, I mean, it's hand over fist near the top. Coming down is where issues start, though. That's, you know, if somebody's going to get hurt, they usually get hurt on a downhill.
Yeah.
But that climb up Dutcher's Notch, after you've run 12 and a half miles, and you've been up and down Blackhead, you've been up and down Windham, and you've been over a few of the other rollers, that is the one that people are like, oh my gosh, this was so hard. I had, you know, they were, and then it's kind of symbolic. They get to that airplane crash at the top of Stoppel, which really yep. is sort of like their end of their big climbs. And that's sort of symbolic of what they've been through.
Yeah. So now, is there, at times, do you switch the starting points, or is it always from Windham?
It's always from Windham. It's always the same course. Okay. The only thing it changes is if the DEC puts in a switchback or something.
Okay.
You know, so it's been the same course ever since the race started. And, you know, people care about their records and their times from year to year. We keep track of it. And then the other thing is we also keep track of people. If they've run six races, then they've got 100 miles worth of races on the Escarpment Trail. And so then they get a shirt like this. Yeah, I don't know if you can see it.
Oh, nice.
It says 100 Mile Club. And then when they get 11, then they got 200. And now we're up to, I got a 700 Mile Club shirt.
So. Wow. Unbelievable. Yeah. So definitely, like you said, going up that one side of Blackhead and going down the side of Blackhead, and then Dutcher's Notch is, I think it's Dutcher's Notch is almost comparable to like the end of the Devil's Path of St. Anne's Peak.
Yeah.
People do not expect that. And they're just like, oh, you know, they call St. Anne's Peak, I hate to say it, but what the fuck peak?
It's the hardest peak. It's the hardest climb on that Westkill Loop.
Yeah, because they don't remember seeing that on the elevation gain or loss. They're just like, oh, it's a little bump. No, it isn't.
No, it's a real slap in the face.
It'll kill you. So do you have any like crazy stories from the past 46 years like that you would like to talk about?
Well, you know, we had one year where we, going back to 2008, and we had the lightning. Race started, people were all spread out all over the trail, and then we had this storm, it rolled in, and it just kept for a couple of hours. We had crazy lightning, and you know, people were from between Blackhead and North Point, so at this point they're already on the trails, not much you can do about it. And that was a wild year. You know, it was so much rain coming down. I remember the joke going up Blackhead was that there was so much water coming down the trail that some guy said, yeah, I got passed by a salmon.
Nice.
Can I write a couple of things here? Oh, yeah. Well, you know, there was this one guy, and I won't mention him by name, or just his first name, Charlie, and he had qualified for the Olympic trials in the marathon. So he saw this race and he saw the times and he wanted to come up and run this race. He wanted appearance fee and everything else. I said, look, we don't run that show this way. And he said, well, I'm going to come up there and break your course record. And I said, you are. And he said, yeah. He said, because you face it, you guys aren't running that fast. I said, oh, okay. You can stay at my house. So he came up and, you know, he half had me believing that he was just going to rip this thing apart. And this is a guy that had run a marathon in 2 hours and 18 minutes. For 26 miles. So he came here and the gun went off and he went up the trail right beyond the heels of the guy that was the defending champ. And I went up the, you know, I can remember going up the trail and I see Charlie coming. As I come over Windham, I catch Charlie. And he said, he's just going to run with me for a little while. And then bam, he fell right down. And then he was up and then he fell again. And long story short, Charlie ended up running 4.5 hours.
Wow. You know, shows you what flat surfaces can do compared to not flat surfaces.
He was not a happy camper. He came back 10 years later and he said to me, I said, Charlie, why'd you come back? He said, I came back to see if I hated this race as much as I thought I did. And I said, well, what's the verdict at the finish line? He goes, yeah, I do.
Nice. Once again, the Catskills, man, are unexpected.
It will spit you out, you know.
So I know, like you talked about, you know, a guy running in 2 hours, 18 minutes. We didn't go over who holds the record. Do you know who holds it? What's the record of the fastest?
Lee Berube, who is he's won it 4 times now. He's the defending champ. He has run the race. The course record is ridiculously quick. 2 hours, 42 minutes, 9 seconds.
Jesus. Wow, 18.46 miles in 2 hours and 42 minutes.
And on that trail. So, you know, that's just lightning fast. And
wow.
Casey Bradley Byrne, who hasn't run it since, the 90s, holds the women's course record at 3:07. And that's, you know, there's no other woman has been within, you know, 15 minutes of her.
Wow. And that's 1999.
She ran it, I think, I wrote it down here.
Yeah, somewhere. I'm looking at it right now.
19. Yeah, okay.
Wow. That is crazy. That hasn't even been near. Nobody has been near that. And, you know, it's been 5 years. Michelle Merrills did it.
Michelle ran 3:26 last year.
Okay.
And that's the fastest time any woman has run in 20 years.
Wow. Awesome. Wow. Crazy. Crazy stats, Jesus.
So, and the second fastest time is second fastest woman. Casey's got the 4 fastest times for women. That is Nikki Kimball. And Nikki Kimball went on after the Scarpment, went on to win the Western States 100 miler, which is the most prestigious 100 miler in the world.
Wow. Awesome. So it shows you that this run is iconic, is definitely a run that people are just like, man, I need to get into this run and see what it's all about. And then they're just like, holy shit, this kicks my ass.
Yeah. And you know, some of them love it and some of them don't, because it's gnarly and it's tough. It's been around and now Lee, you know, the runners that do well here are those that can both run fast on the roads and run trails. And that combination of having that engine that they build on the roads and then be able to just get that trail dance down. Those are the people that really run fast here.
Yeah. Crazy. I gotta be on this trail. So July 30th, right?
July 30th. Yeah. We start at 9 o'clock. And that means first person will commit, you know, sometime, generally speaking, sometime before 12 o'clock.
Jesus. All right. So I gotta find myself somewhere and watch this crazy stuff. So any crazy hiking stories from you, because, you know, you've been out there for a while now, so you got any crazy hiking stories you want to share?
Yeah, I'll tell you one that happened to me last year, because I never saw this coming.
Last year,
I still run the race on my own. I go out on a day and I run it virtually. Okay. So I was running it last year, September 1st, and it was a cool night and the sun was on the rocks. And anyway, I was going up Blackhead and I got bit by a rattlesnake.
Whoa, no way.
Yeah, I didn't even know what happened. I just know I reached up and I'm bleeding and I'm thinking, what? I can't even see where I'm cut, but I'm bleeding badly. And, you know, people say to me, well, didn't you feel it? I said, no, I was running up Blackhead. You know, I was in a world of hurt.
Yeah.
I sat at the top, I let the bleeding stop, and then I went on and I finished up. And then I still couldn't really see any marks. The next morning, I woke up with the two fang marks. And I since showed it to a number of emergency room docs. And they said, this is definitely a rattlesnake bite.
No crap.
So 25 to 30% of the time when an adult rattlesnake bites you, it does not inject venom. It's what they call a dry bite.
And, wow. Mr. Lucky right there.
Yeah, I mean, I got a picture of it. I could probably send it to you, and I don't know if you can.
Please do, because that is, I got to post that on Snow.
I could do that right in a minute. I don't know if you could put it on this thing or not.
Yeah. So the funny thing is, we were going up, of course, you know, Overlook, and we were talking about rattlesnake bites. And the one of the 2018 is when I got my 3,500 club certificate, and they had a guy who did rattlesnake bites in the Catskills that did the presentation. And just the crazy, like you said, 25 to 30% are dry bites, or more than are regular bites, but then the others are dry bites. And this guy was showing pictures of the actual bites and the time lapse. It was so gnarly and disgusting.
Yeah. And let's see. I just think I got this here to you. So I don't know if you can do anything. I just sent it to your Facebook message.
Oh, there it is. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's definitely not a significant tree branch thing.
What I didn't know at the time when I first got it, I thought, oh, maybe I got bit by a black snake or something, but only venomous snakes have fangs.
Wow. So that I've never heard of a rattlesnake on a Blackhead. Nice.
I never had either. I'd seen a lot of snakes up there. Never saw a rattlesnake.
Wow.
You know, definitely. Maybe this was a copperhead. I didn't have the interview with him, you know.
Well, you wanted to finish the race, of course.
But I think there's more, you know, in the Catskills, there's more rattlesnakes than copperheads, so.
Yeah. Crazy. Wow. And that was last year.
That was the last year. Yeah. Yep.
Wow. Anything like, have you been caught in any situations where you were just like, you know, like maybe I might not like I might need a rescue from this or no?
I've been lucky. I mean, I've gotten hurt out there, but I've always been able to kind of get myself in, you know, and hiking, same thing. I've been out in the snow and, you know, you get cold and you get all the different things. Thankfully, I've always had the gear with me to get myself out of trouble. But, you know, we go back. I was talking to you before when I said you see sometimes people out there doing stupid stuff. Well, I've done all that stupid stuff. Not, you know, just because you don't think about it, right? And you learn. Thankfully, whenever I have, I mean, I've been caught out without lights back before we had headlamps and everything. You know,
yeah.
And, you know, I'd go over to, I used to run over to Overlook and stuff on the trail from Pretty Good Road. And I remember one time, okay, it's dark and I'm not there.
Wow. It's just like you said, the times have changed. When it was just like, you know, sometimes you guys would be a kind of like a bet or a dare. It's like, you know, let's see if you can finish this before daylight. And then also you're coming halfway down. You're like, I can't see shit.
Yeah. Right. And you're saying to yourself, I think that's a trail marker. Let me feel for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on the trail.
Exactly. And then now people are lucky enough to have phones to get themselves out of these situations, but we still have those times, but nothing like they did back in the days.
You know, I can't tell you how excited I was when they first started putting out those trail markers that were reflective.
Yeah. When do you think that was?
I think that was like 20 years ago.
Wow.
A group of us always used to do the escarpment trail under the full moon in the winter.
Oh, hell yeah.
And one year there was so much snow that going across the top of Blackhead, you know how the trees kind of grow in over top of you. We were on our hands and knees because there was so much snow. And and you get down there in the wintertime, you can't see the path. But some, you know, we get that, we, those things lighting up, that really made it a difference.
Oh yeah, definitely. Crazy. So what about your favorite spot in the Catskills besides the escarpment? Like favorite one spot that you can't say, like, I can't miss this.
I really like North Point.
Right.
You know, I like any of the boreal forests, top of plateau, you know, any place where you've got that North Dome you were talking about. I love North Dome.
Oh, yeah.
It just, you know, when you're up there and you're in that boreal forest and it's just wonderful. I love on Wyndham, you know, you've got that section we call the Enchanted Forest. I call it Upper Roots, Lower Roots, where it's that rooty section and all the pines and the moss and the greenness. I love that going through there.
Yeah.
But any, you know, there's so many of the Catskills that have that boreal forest, which is kind of the stuff that's, you know, that's where the Bicknell thrush is, the rare species and things. And that's the part now where we're beating it to death with all of our herd pathing. But, you know, that's the part I love the most.
Yeah, I agree. Getting up into that forest and, you know, that smell, that scent of just like, oh, like I'll tell my wife every time I'm up there, I'm like, you smell that? Smell that? And my friend used to say we're in summit country. That's what he would always say.
You know, I like that term. I haven't heard that before, but that's it. You, some of these peaks, you know, you get a few falls. Oh yeah, we're almost there. But then you start to smell that forest and you know.
Yeah, definitely. So Dick, once again, we're ending to the ending part of the show. So thank you for joining me. One last thing though, post hike Bruise and Bites, you are like almost a native to the Catskills. Where's your favorite place to go in the Catskills to have something to eat or drink?
You know, I like Maggie's Crooked Cafe in Tannersville.
Oh yeah.
And you know, I love Brio's. I think Brio's is probably high on everybody's list. Yes. In the winter, you go to Brio's at the end of a hiking day in the winter, and the place is jammed.
Yep.
That Phoenicia Diner is really good.
Yeah. That's been a big hit, of course. Just with social media, but it still hasn't lost its touch, I gotta admit.
Yeah, that's, you know, so, you know, I think Phoenicia's kind of a crossroads. People pass through there a lot, and people pass through Tannersville a lot, and those spots are just real good. And so, and you know, I know Maggie, so I like to go in there and see her. And
nice. I'll plug that place into here definitely and get people to go there. That's what I like to do. I like to spread the love.
Yeah.
All right, so
podcast you have. Thank you very much.
Yeah, dude, it's so great to have you once again. Like the positivity, the influence that you have on the Catskills is huge. And you know, I was once one of those guys who was like, you know, I don't want anybody to know about this, but you know about that. I don't want anybody to know about the Catskills, but you know what? We need the help we can get. You know, if we get volunteers, we get people, we can maintain this place to be as beautiful as it once was. I hate to say it, like 7 years ago.
You know, you're right. And so now we need to get the word out, right? That we've got to preserve this and we've got to be better with how we go into these boreal forests and these so-called trailless peaks, which are no trailless anymore. We got to find a way to preserve it.
Yep. And that's what I'm trying to do. That education is key. Education is key.
Yes, it is.
Yes. So thank you to the monthly supporters. Really appreciate you guys supporting the show. Monthly sponsors. Once again, thank you guys for sponsoring the show. Anybody who's donated, thank you very much. Anybody who's donated to the Alzheimer's Association fundraiser that I did, appreciate it. Also, thank you anyone who's listening. I think anybody who has participated in the Escarpment Trail Run, fantastic thing. I can't wait to get up there and check it out. Dick, thanks for joining me on the show. I greatly appreciate it. This was fantastic fun time. I had a great time.
Thank you very much. I did too.
All right. So have a good night, Dick, and I will hopefully see you on the trail soon.
Great. I look forward to meeting you in person again.
Heck yeah. All right. Bye.
Hey guys, I just want to thank you for listening to the show. If you enjoyed the show, subscribe. And throw down a smooth review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any podcast platform that you use. You can also check daily updates of the podcast, hikes, hiking memes, and local news on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and the official website of the show. Remember this, you just keep on living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
Wicked, 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 wicked.